Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care, with a focus on patient-centered care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to You Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on You Drink Indiana Radio, we have a Valentine's Day lineup for you. We'll be talking baking with pastry chef Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Sweets and chocolate with Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit. We'll talk with Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections, and we'll check in with EatDrinkIndy.com craft beer writer Will Carroll. And we'll be in the kitchen at Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis for our Cook This segment with Executive Chef Alan Sternberg. So stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Happy Valentine's Day, Indianapolis. It's cold, it's kind of snowy, and yes, it is Valentine's Day. And for some of you, it's a long weekend, which makes it the perfect kind of winter weekend to stay in and maybe do a little baking, right? Now, you could always bake some cookies or brownies for your Valentine, or maybe if you're a little more ambitious, you might go for a cheesecake. And all of those are certainly doable. In fact, I've probably got a great recipe for any of them. But if you've been following along with my baking efforts lately, both here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio as well as on Facebook, you know that my recent attempts haven't been all that successful. So, what have I been baking? Soufflés. Yes, I decided a while back that I needed to learn how to make soufflés, and I'm not exactly sure why, just that they're classic and French, and at the time I was thinking about classic French dishes, and so soufflés it was. The problem was that I had never made them. Of course, I've never made duck à l'orange before either, another French dish that came up in conversation, but I have a feeling that I would have been more successful at that. I'm pretty sure I can follow along a recipe for any sort of roasted poultry, but the soufflés were another thing altogether. In case you haven't made many soufflés either, it involves cooking milk with butter and sugar and flour and vanilla, which I was fine with, and then you fold in the whipped egg whites, and it was the whipped egg whites that I just wasn't sure about. I mean, I thought I knew what stiff peaks were and what egg whites look like when they reach that point, but, you know, maybe not. Maybe I whipped them too much, or not enough. Or maybe they just deflated when I folded them into the rest of the ingredients. Maybe that's why the soufflés I've tried so far just haven't risen like they're supposed to. Now, granted, I am only up to 3 tries, but I did head over to the culinary department at Ivy Tech Community College after my first disappointing effort for a few soufflé pointers from pastry chef and culinary instructor Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Sweets. And it all looked so easy when she did it, of course.
The one we make here in classical pastries is a chocolate souffle. It's going to have a little Grand Marnier and some orange juice in it. The other one we're going to do, the French pastry one, is just a plain French souffle, no chocolate. It's just going to be neutral kind of flavor. We're going to make our souffle base first. So we're going to take the orange juice. We're going to heat that up on a saucepan. I'm going to whisk the egg yolks and my first little bit of sugar together. Actually, most of my sugar, not even all my sugar. And then we're going to add the flour and put that back on the saucepan. It's going to get a little bit thick. Okay. I'm going to let that get a little bit thick, but I don't want it to boil. I don't want it to reach that boiling point. I just want it thick. Just want it warm. Then what we're going to add our chocolate and our Grand Marnier to that. And then basically we're just going to fold our egg whites into that. And we're going to gently bring everything in, put it in our cups, and go.
Okay, so you have heating up the orange juice, right?
I have my orange juice, and in my bowl I've got most of my sugar, the flour, and my egg yolks. And I'm going to add my warm orange juice to my other ingredients. We're going to just stir that up together, bring it all together, and I'm going to put it back into the saucepan. And then I'm going to cook this till it gets thick. Again, I don't want it to boil. I just want to make it thick. So now I'm putting everything back into the saucepan. Put that back under my heat for just a couple minutes. We're going to keep stirring it the whole time. And again, I don't want it to boil. So when you're doing souffles, you can actually make the base, the first part of it, anything but the egg white the day before. You can have it all ready to go. You know, if you are in a restaurant where you do make these, you could have a bunch of base and keep in the fridge for a day. Then what you do is take that part out and fold in your egg whites, your whipped egg whites, when you're ready to use it. Part of the reason why you don't see souffle in restaurants is a timing situation. It's not a pastry department can't make it, the cooks can't make it. It's you have to really be able to time it just right.
So the customer has to be ready for that souffle when it's ready to go.
Yeah, the customer has to be ready for that souffle when the kitchen's ready to send it out. So there's no sitting around. So you see how thick we got? We've got a nice thick paste. We're going to go ahead and add our chocolate to this, and we're going to just stir it till it all gets melted. I've got just a nice dark chocolate in here, just some Calibo, probably 56 or 64%. We're just going to stir this till it's all melted. As soon as that's melted, I'm going to add my Grand Marnier. We're doing a chocolate orange souffle here.
And it's not taking long to melt.
No, right? No. It's pretty warm. Chocolate melts pretty quickly. And then we'll add our Grand Marnier on top of that. And just let this all get incorporated. Then we'll transfer everything back to our bowl and put our saran wrap on top to keep that bacteria and that skin from forming. While that's coming to room temp, we'll go ahead and make our second base with the French Pastry School recipe. And then this will be cool enough. We can do our egg whites. We'll do the egg whites for the second one and then pretty much go in the oven right about the same time.
Now, this is from your school.
This is French Pastry School, yep. This is what we had to make as students. This was one of your practical exams during your section. This was for a plated desserts class. So this was one of the ones that was on a very strict timeline. So you had an appointed oven time for your souffle. And if you missed your oven time, you were out of luck. You had to wait, and hopefully you could find oven space later. But, you know, I remember as a kid, or even watching TV when I was younger, like they would be talking about souffles on a sitcom or something, and it would always be like, don't touch the oven door, it'll collapse, you know. They're fragile. They're not that fragile, you know. I think we get a little crazy sometimes.
So after creating a base for two souffles, one with chocolate and Grand Marnier and one with just vanilla, we started talking about egg whites.
So with your egg whites could always use a little help. Right. Be that a little bit of sugar, be that a little cream of tartar, be that a pinch of salt. They always could use a little bit of something. You can certainly whip egg whites without anything, but this gives it a little extra stability. So it'll let it, you know, be handled a little bit better. I'm going to turn that one on here. So we've got our first recipe, which was the chocolate. We're going to go ahead and start those egg whites. And these are just egg whites. This recipe just uses just good old egg whites.
I'm always worried that I'm not whipping them enough or I'm whipping them too much.
Well, egg whites are interesting. You know, you can tell by looking at them now, they're nowhere near ready. They're really wet. They're really kind of sloshy. You'll go through a little kind of a little arc of egg white. There's, you'll get those soft peaks where if you pull your whisk out and you kind of just like pull up a big bunch of your whites, it'll kind of bend just a little bit, kind of hang down. If it hangs pretty low, like the little triangle, little point, soft peaks, not ready. Medium peaks will be a little bit stiffer. Those stiff peaks are usually what we're looking for. If you get them and all of a sudden you're kind of lumpy, there's big pieces of it, doesn't come out really nice and smooth and pretty, you've gone too far.
Okay, now tell me about the ramekins and what you're going to do with those.
Okay, first I want to make sure I have a straight-sided ramekin. Okay. So we've got a couple different ones here. This one, you see it's got that really big lip in it.
Right.
It won't come up as pretty in this one. This one, it's more of, this is a souffle dish. It's kind of more that straight side. I'm going to have some butter that's been melted but re-kind of coagulated a little bit. It's
so you could still spread it.
Yeah. I want it to be like that soft butter, like kind of butter you could put on toast easily.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and stop these from roasting while we do that. I want to keep them moving always.
Okay.
So I'm going to take that butter, kind of pasty butter. I'm going to do the sides of my dish. I'm going to just brush up the sides. I want to make sure I get it off. I've got a little lip. I want to make sure I get that filled in too. Okay. So up and down. Some people say go straight up and down. I honestly don't know if that makes a difference, but it can't hurt, so we'll give it a try. Okay. So I'm going to get all my dishes ready. Then what I want to do is I want to get a little bit of granulated sugar, and I want to sprinkle it. Just like if you were going to coat a pan with flour and you know, butter and flour, uh-huh. Same principle. It's going to help it to not stick, but we don't want to put flour on this because why would you want to eat raw flour? Sugar is what we want to go with. So what you always want to do, you want to fold your lighter item into your heavier item. So my souffle base is obviously the heavier of the items, right? It's much thicker, heavier. So I want to take about half or so of maybe a third of this, and we want to just start bringing it in here, okay?
Now, how much do you stir to incorporate? I always
75% of the way.
Okay.
So when about 75% of my egg whites are incorporated, I'm going to grab the next little chunk. What we don't want to do is if you mixed all of it in now, you're going to deflate all your egg whites before you get to the end of it.
Right.
So I'm going to take the next little bit. The other thing, too, is I watch people fold. This is one of the reasons I like teaching the intro to baking class, because I like them to learn those basic techniques. You watch people fold, they're going, twisting, and, you know, kind of like it looks like they're trying to play golf, like every uncomfortable move. Your right hand, if you're right-handed, your right hand holds your whisk or your spatula. I also fold with a whisk. It also will help to incorporate air if you're afraid of deflating. Your left hand, all it does is spin the bowl. That's all it does. Spins the bowl. With my right hand, I put the spatula in the very center of my product. I lift it, and I set it right back on top. It might not feel like you're accomplishing anything, but I promise you are, and you're not deflating all your egg whites. So then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this and I'm going to portion it into my souffle cups. I want it to go over the top. I want it to go too big.
So how much do you fill up?
I want to be able to scrape it off with an offset spatula and cover rim to rim the entire thing, okay? So I'm going to put some in here. I guess I could have grabbed a spoon or something.
So you're really filling it right up to the top.
To the very top. I'm going to actually overfill it a little bit, and then we'll wipe the edges off again. Now, that trick with the thumbnail...
Right, so you're going to run your thumb around the edge.
I'm going to take my thumb, and I basically want to separate that top edge. I want to get it away from the lip of the glass, of the souffle dish. So I just kind of, just a little bit of a rim there.
And they don't bake very long, right?
They don't, about 15, 20 minutes. Again, sometimes it can be hard for people to decide when they're done. They're going to have a little bit, almost like a little bit of a wet look on the outside edge. That's okay. You know, it's a moist product, but they're going to still be, they'll be a little bit firm to the touch. But again, you want to be super, super careful with them. They're not the kind of thing that you want to keep opening the oven door. Do you think they're done? Do you think they're done? Because eventually they're going to fall and you're going to be sad. Sad things happen. The key would be make sure you have a nice flat sheet tray. That top one of mine is not terribly straight. Nice flat sheet tray and just a nice quiet kitchen, you know, just a nice space where you don't have, you know, people running around and checking things. But again, in no time at all, all of a sudden you'll look and you're like, oh my gosh, they're an inch taller now. So, but it's a lot of fun.
We have been baking with pastry chef Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Sweets and Ivy Tech Community College. For more information on Cindy and her French-inspired pastries, including croissants and her popular king cakes from Mardi Gras, go to CircleCitySweets.com. Well, since it is Valentine's Day, it just seemed like the perfect time to check in with chocolatier Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit, who works with some of the world's finest chocolates. She's been preparing for Valentine's Day since Christmas time. It's a month away from Valentine's Day. You are a chocolatier. What is your life like this time of year?
I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with all things Valentine's Day. So here's the deal. People assume that in the chocolate business, per se, that Valentine's Day is huge and maybe even the hugest. The holiday season that we just came through, there's Thanksgiving rolled in there, there's Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, parties, all that. Okay, so it's a very extended period of time. And people consume a lot, plus they gift a lot. In total, that is the big time of year, okay? From a revenue perspective, that is it. Oftentimes, for the gifting, people are not necessarily looking for the most gourmet of our product line, okay? So, for instance, some of the bonbons and truffles boxed very fancy, that isn't necessarily what they're looking for during that period.
Oh, no, I would have thought that would catch their eye right away. What is it that they do want?
Toffee. Overall, the toffee is probably the number one seller, but I have a couple of connoisseur bars and the Mayan Spice Bar. So they're sort of all run neck to neck. So people will buy like maybe a variety. And, for instance, a lot of stocking stuffers. So the toffee and some of the items that we sell in the $10 range are really popular. So they'll buy a lot of those. Then comes Valentine's Day. People are not purchasing from multiple people.
Oh, sure. So they're not giving presents. It's not like you have a whole a present list to give, right?
Exactly. Typically, people who are going to give for Valentine's Day, flowers and chocolate. Now, the chocolate that they give for Valentine's Day is in my wheelhouse because it's going to be more the fine chocolate.
Oh, this is the really nice present kind of chocolate, right?
Exactly. So the fancy boxes and the day after Christmas, what I did was inventoried everything that I had, and I immediately put in my orders for the special packaging that I needed for Valentine's Day, okay? So They will gift, and what they gift is going to probably be, from a price perspective and a product perspective, a higher price, a more premium product, but they're not going to be buying for as many people.
Oh, so that does that balance out then?
Well, it's one day. There's an expectation right at the last minute that they're going to walk into my place and others, and they're going to have just a fantastic, huge choice. And it's all going to be there for them.
So they expect a big selection, you know, on February the 13th, right, when they're finally getting around to doing their shopping.
Absolutely. They expect that. Now, we could have the worst snowstorm we've ever had on that day, and we wouldn't see them. And it could go on the entire weekend. And there you go. People are not going to be buying Valentine chocolates on February 15th, 16th, and 17th.
So after the holiday, they start looking for markdowns, right? So this is a big this is a big timing thing for you, right? Of juggling and timing.
Yes. So, you know, so we get the packaging, and I've made in my mind, a list of what I want to make, and I also try to make something new every year. It's a fun time for me because I like to create. So it's a very creative experience, but it also is very risky, the timing of all this.
So it's all a gamble. So you have to gamble on the weather and the produce and the fact that whether people will come out. Oh, my goodness.
It is. Yeah, it's really fun. And people sort of think, oh, wow, that's your great big day. That maybe is your biggest day of the year. And it can be incredible.
Right. If you get the perfect lineup of the situation, right?
Right. So I've experienced in life that very few moments where everything has lined up perfectly. So I'm prepared to expect the unexpected.
Once Valentine's is over, tell me what you have coming up that people could look forward to. I know you've been doing some classes. So tell me about the classes that you have here at Chocolate for the Spirit.
Yes. Well, another objective of mine is to bring others on board with my journey for the pursuit of some of the world's best chocolate. Okay. A lot of the chocolate that we have experienced growing up, the beans have been bought at auctions, a low price, and fillers and artificial flavorings have been put in. And that's not what we're doing. We're working with chocolate where the chocolate itself is a star. Whether you just made a solid bar of it or did something else with it, we always want to feature the chocolate. So I have classes. One's called Connoisseur 101, where we do 2 hours of information and exploration and tasting and working our way through chocolate, some of the things that are familiar all the way to some of the world's rarest and best chocolates. And then we're also doing a build-your-own chocolate bar classes where people get to select chocolate and then a variety of ingredients to do a little bit of what I get to do as a chocolatier, which is, you know, think about what might work together.
Like the types of chocolate paired with different flavors, that sort of thing?
Yes, fruits and nuts and spices, yes, cocoa nibs, for instance. And then they get bars to take home and share. It's interesting because they make 4 bars, and so far nobody is wanting to eat the bars here. Everybody's wanting to take the bars home.
They all want to take them home and show off and see what I made and
see what they like. Other people like it. So we do give a little award in those classes for best of show, but because nobody wants to break any of the bars to taste, it has to be a beauty contest. It's based solely on how do the bars look.
Yeah. And what kind of combinations do they come up with?
First of all, everybody really likes spices. A lot of spices. Okay. We have a full line of different gourmet salts, so they're also getting some salt in their bars. We're seeing a lot of berries, like blueberries and dried strawberries, cranberries, nuts. People are really nuts about nuts, okay?
Now tell me what the price range is on those classes.
They are under $40. Sometimes we work with Living Social and Groupon, and people can get those classes for half price or even a better deal.
Now, tell me about where people can go for more information.
Well, we love our mailing list, folks, because that's the way that we know that we can connect. We are Chocolate Spirit on Facebook. The problem with Facebook, though, is Facebook is sort of cutting us off from the people that want to connect with us these days. So the sure way to connect with us is to go to our website, chocolateforthespirit.com, and then sign up for our newsletter there.
We've been talking with Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit. Anyone still in need of Valentine's treats can check out her shop in Carmel and at the Indianapolis City Market, or go to chocolateforthespirit.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis, eskenazihealth.edu. Well, Valentine's treats don't always have to be chocolate, of course. Candy maker Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections has created a line of little sweet treats, including her signature Friddle, that would also make anyone's Valentine very happy. She has been swamped since Christmas, too, making boxes and boxes and boxes of candy. So we're right here where the magic happens, right? So tell me what you're doing.
I am making Friddle candy. Yeah.
And what all does that entail? You have all sorts of things, and I'm standing here in the way.
Yeah, that's okay. Right now during this season, we make Friddle and other candy every day, all day. And right now you are standing in the kitchen burning hot candy around you. But yeah, it is a choreographed dance. We were talking about this the other day, and we know like who is where things are hot, who's turning, and very minimal communication. I know you've been in a lot of kitchens where people give you the temperature and direction, which way they're headed. And so we do a lot of that here.
So now tell me again, for people who aren't familiar with Friddle, tell me what it is and what's sure. in it, that sort of thing.
Basic ingredients, it's sugar and a touch of corn syrup for texture for candy. And instead of finishing it with peanuts, like brittle, and a little bit of butter, we actually finish it with some peanut butter. And it is a softer version of brittle.
And now, has that become the main thing that you do? But I think you've added other things to the product line, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Friddle is the original candy. We did that pretty much straight for about a year and a half when we were starting out, me and Jana over there. And then we were able to add southern pralines, as they say, for some of the Yatz restaurants. And then we still make those are delicious, very sweet confection, Cajun Creole confection. And then we also added sweet and spicy pecans. As you see, I can't stop moving because candy waits on nobody.
Well, that's fine. So right now, you're cutting out the pieces of what's going to be Friddle. Now tell me how long you've been at this and how it started.
Well, in the food service I've been in for a few years. In candy making, this is the end of our third season. So we really still consider ourselves a brand new, young company, still learning some lots of major, what's the word I'm looking for? Learning a lot of lessons along the way, some even today. But just always love food service, always love being in the kitchen, and each job or each career, each business just somehow naturally leads into the next.
So are you very scientific about your methods?
Definitely in candy, you have to be. And it's really not a joke about the humidity thing. If it's, you know, if we're even just washing dishes a lot, or we've got some, you know, sweet and spicy pecans going on in the oven, and there's some moisture coming off the butter and the brown sugar mix, plus dishes, plus nonstop frittle, it just gets tacky on top, and it takes a little while to dry out.
So that actually makes a difference? I mean, even as something like washing dishes a lot in the same room can make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, and I think I've mentioned this before with you, that I really do try to break a recipe. So you get a recipe, it's good, it's really not good enough to do it a dozen times. You need it to turn out the same hundreds of times, thousands of times. So you think, like, how much of this one ingredient, how much of this heat, how much of this humidity, until it's like, I got it, I don't got it. And then you just lose, you know, the texture, or you lose being able to count on it to be the same every time. And so I'm not saying, like, you can't do one load of dishes or, you know, one load of that. It's just when it's really, really busy right now, those things do matter. And it, you know, winter even, there's a lot of humidity still, a little bit of rain or snow or ice. But summer is really a killer on us. So we don't do a ton. And it's not an emergency candy season. There's no emergency orders. So summer, we're able to, you know, work on other things, keep our wholesalers happy, maybe design some new candies. It's the end of our third year, and, you know, we're up to a whopping 4 candies. But we know all the ins and outs of those 4, and feel like we do it pretty well.
So now tell me, how much frittle are you making in a holiday season?
I'll just say millions of pieces. Yeah.
Really?
Literally boxes.
Yeah. Right. Literally millions of pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done the math, and yeah, we've done millions of pieces. So right now we're working on, it's what I would consider a large order, but a online, these subscription services, these like treat companies. Somebody ordered from us for their December subscription box about 1,200 slightly smaller amounts than Frittle Box. And if you know the Frittle Box, it has a very specific size. It was exactly 1/2 inch too tall. So they helped us together. We just developed new packaging. And I think it's going to be a winner, even at the events here in Indianapolis. And so it's a slightly less amount of Frittle, and put a really cute design sticker on it. And that's what's going to end up in these treat boxes, 1,200 of them.
That's a lot of treat boxes.
Is
your December usually like this?
You know, this is, again, the third December, so it just changes. I mean, we continue to make more candy each year. We need more seasonal help each year. So I think we'll definitely continue on that path.
We've been talking with Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections. For more information on her line of frittle, pralines, spice pecans, and other treats, and where to find them, go to newfangledconfections.com. Thinking that maybe your Valentine might prefer a present in the form of a growler of local craft beer? Well, eatdrinkindy.com's craft beer writer Will Carroll just checked out a lineup of Southside breweries, including a brew-it-yourself establishment, that offer plenty of winning brews for anyone's craft beer-loving Valentine.
Hi, Will Carroll with Eat Drink Indy. And, you know, what's great about the Indianapolis beer scene is that it's not just local beer, it's hyper-local beer. I'm sure you can probably all remember the days of the neighborhood pub that your dad or your granddad would go down and have a couple drinks with his friends. We've kind of lost that. We've got chains, we've got Applebee's, we've got Chili's, we've even got some local chains. And while the food is great and there's nothing wrong with them, we've lost that neighborhood feel. Craft beer is starting to bring that back, and a recent tour in Johnson County, south of Indianapolis, Greenwood, Center Grove, Trafalgar, Bargersville, Franklin, and more on that in a bit, they're actually putting together a tour. They're trying to raise tourism, get people down to the south side. It's not just Carmel. It's not just downtown that has a great beer scene. In fact, according to the new group Loco for Joco, which is promoting the local craft beer, they're saying that there is more density per person or per capita in Johnson County than there is in any area aside from the immediate downtown area. It's pretty surprising until you realize what kind of great breweries they have down here. I was lucky enough to be a part of that. A lot of people, you know, Amy Hanline from the Indy Star, Nikki Reed from WZPL, a lot of great people were on the tour. And Johnson County brought out the big hitters. They had Mayor Mark Myers from Greenwood, a number of other people involved in the craft beer scene. So let me tell you about the tour a little bit, because there were five places we stopped, and I just can't get over the fact that four breweries, one brew your own, which is fairly interesting. Again, more on that in just a bit. I didn't have a bad beer. I was there with John Ketzenberger, Jolene's husband, and at the end of the tour, we were like, yeah, we didn't have a bad beer. There were beers I liked more than others, certainly. But these four Johnson County breweries, top-notch, and certainly worth your time. We started out the tour at one of the oldest breweries in Indiana, Oak and Barrel. Quan Casey and his people do a great job there. Have a number of beers. Probably their most famous is Raz Wheat, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's raspberry wheat beer. It's fruity but not cloying. It's not oversweet. It is still a very good beer. You can mix that. Here's a quick tip for you that we got from the waitress, Donna. Mix the raspberry and their porter, the Snake Pit Porter there, which is a great, deep, chocolatey beer. You mix the two, and you end up with something a little like a raspberry truffle. Certainly worth a try if you get down there, and I highly recommend it. They've got a lot of great food as well. Their quesadillas, phenomenal. Their ribs, some of the best you're going to find. We jumped back on the Indy beer bus, and they slid us over not too far away to a much smaller brewery, a nano Pico brewery, if you will. I don't know what's smaller than Pico, but this is a small but very nice brewery at Planetary. It's a little tough to find. It's back in an office park. They just opened a tap room, and they've got some great stuff. They've got a barrel-aged dark beer called Elstree. Now, again, they probably won't have a lot of these because they have a two-barrel system. They had six beers. One of the beers they have is a Hefeweizen, which is called, it's Ape Bleep. That's not the name, but, this is a family show, so I don't want to say the actual name. I'm sure you can figure out. Lots of great banana and clove flavors, just like a good Hefeweizen. They didn't have that on tap, but the Elstree was great. They had a Interplanetary, which was a nice IPA, almost more of an American style on taste. And again, certainly worth your time, not only to get down to the south side, but to find Planetary. You can check out their website for directions. From there, we went over to one of my favorite new breweries, Andrew Kastner, and his Mashcraft. Now, they're not going to be the next giant brewery. They're not going to compete with Three Floyds. They're not even doing 1,000 barrels yet in their first year, but they are doing some great beers. One of the ones that John and I were really surprised by was their Ancho Annie. And yeah, you got it. It's a pepper beer. A couple people actually thought it tasted a little bit like cucumber, because there is some spice, but it's not an overpowering one. I remember those old Cave Creek chili beers. Not the best beer you've ever had. It was like putting a jalapeno in a Corona. This, just so full of flavor, great hop flavor. Their Mashcraft Red, absolutely phenomenal. You're really going to like Mashcraft. It's right on 135, just south of County Line, so it's not a big, it's probably 15 minutes from downtown if you hit some lights. Definitely worth your try. And just down from there, this is one I didn't even know was in Johnson County, and I do live in Greenwood. It's a place called Brew By You. Essentially, it's home brewing without the hassle. You don't have to buy the big pots. You don't have to clean all the stuff out. You don't have to come up with a recipe. They do it all for you. They've got the kegs. They've got the tanks. They've got the bottling facility. And they clean up everything, which may be the best part of it. It's something I really want to try out. A very interesting operation. Weren't able to try any. This is the first of its kind in Indiana. And I wouldn't be surprised to see this expand out from there. It's a very nice concept. Very small at this stage. But again, just down from Mashcraft on 135. The tour continued down 135. Our driver Fitz saved us from near death as a guy turned on his left turn signal and turned right in front of the bus. Phenomenal driving there, Fitz. But we made it. We made it to Taxman. And if you haven't been down to Taxman, you've probably seen Taxman brews around, especially their La Maison, which is a Belgian Saison. All of their beers are Belgian in origin, even some of the new ones. But they've opened up a tap room and gastropub in downtown Bargersville. Yeah, Bargersville actually has a downtown. Again, a little bit out of the way, a little bit further down, probably about 25 to 30 minutes from downtown Indianapolis. But oh my gosh, the space is phenomenal. Old hardware store that was gutted, redone. They've got a giant tank room in the back. They've got a barrel room that we got a little bit of a peek at, and their beers are very solid. All of them have a tax theme. They've got hop collector, they've got deduction something, and they had a number of beers. Very high in alcohol. You know, Mashcraft, they actually specialize in session beers, those light alcohol beers, including one of their house beers was like 2.9. You could drink that all day if you wanted to, and I would like to. On the other hand, Taxman, some very, very strong beers. One of them that we sampled was over 10%. And just big, full-bodied flavors on all these Belgians. If you haven't tried real Belgian beer, this is about as close as you're going to come in Indiana. Again, Oak and Barrel, Planetary, Mashcraft, Brew Bayou, and Taxman. A great day, sponsored by Loco for Joco. But you'd be loco not to try some of these on your next trip down to try some beer. For Eat Drink Indy, I'm Will Carroll.
We've heard from EatDrinkIndy.com craft beer writer and sports writer Will Carroll. You can follow Will on Twitter at Injury Expert. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are heading back into the kitchen for another Cook This segment, where I challenge local chefs to create a dish using whatever main ingredient I happen to bring. This week, it was skirt steak. Chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis talks us through how he prepared it.
Probably going to marinate it. If I'm cooking for myself, it's probably going to be some kind of ginger, soy, chili, glaze, or not glaze, but marinade.
Why those flavors?
Because that's what I really like to eat on my days off. Yeah. A lot of Asian food, a lot of Mexican food, a lot of Latin food on my days off. I kind of restrain from some of it at the restaurant because, I don't know, cooking at home and cooking at the restaurant are completely different. Inherently different, actually. You know, you don't have a dishwasher, you don't have a, you know, an endless supply of towels and all the equipment you want and all the herbs you want. So at the restaurant, it's a little more refined. At home, it's a little more just simple comfort food. So I'm gonna quickly marinate this in a vacuum, just for the sake of time, that way you're not here all day. And then I'm probably just gonna simply grill it and figure out a couple of accoutrements for it. I'm probably going to grab some gochujang because it's my favorite chili product. It's got a nice little fermented quality to it. I'm going to grab some tamari, some honey, a little bit of rice wine vinegar, just kind of round out, again, those flavors I really like.
So now tell me what that does.
All right, so basically we're just kind of quickly trying to penetrate the meat with a little bit of that marinade, especially the salt, because the salt molecule is actually small enough it can penetrate meat. Salt and sugar do very well. That's why most brines are comprised mostly of salt and sugar. Also, it's going to make it a little more dense because as it vacuums down, the cells are actually expanding. And then as it lets go of that vacuum, it kind of compresses it all down a little bit. It's not actually compression, but it's reinforcing any air gaps that are in between the cells, basically. So I'm already going inherently Asian, so it's got to not necessarily be Asian, but just thinking about flavor profiles in my head. Thinking about prep we already have, thinking about what I can do quickly for you. Yeah, I've got a couple options I'm starting to lean towards. So we got some great wild, or field mustard that we got from Annabelle Gardens yesterday that I'm looking at immediately. I like mustard and Asian flavors together a lot. Thinking carrot, thinking some baby turnip maybe. Maybe just a nice little root vegetable and mustard salad over top of it, and you know, leave it simple and easy for you.
Now what are you doing?
All right, so I'm quickly slicing some pickled carrots. There's some baby red carrots that I got from one of my local farmers, and they're quite tasty. I'm throwing the steak on the grill real quick. Get a couple, a little bit of grill marks, and serve it up. I guess I'm also gonna reheat some sauce too.
So what's that?
Okay, this is a tamari sweet potato and five spice puree. I don't really like sweet potatoes, but a lot of people do. So basically, I added tamari to make it saltier, and the five spice complements it actually pretty well. So it's both something comforting and familiar, but at the same time, a little more depth than your normal normal sweet potato puree. Probably my favorite piece of equipment in the whole restaurant right here.
What's that?
French top. My first cooking job, my saute station that I worked was all French tops. So I kind of fell in love with it right from the get-go, and then when I went to like burners, it took me a minute because they act completely different. I mean, I was used to having, you know, 8 pans on the same space that you have, you know, 4 to 6 pans on a conventional cooktop. But you kind of learn to work it, and because it's got hot spots and you can hold stuff, and some things you can kind of not necessarily ignore, but you can kind of just let be for a little bit, like in the corners. And I love that we have one. It was actually one of the things I was most excited about when I took this job, was the fact that there was a French shop.
Tell me what you're doing.
All right, so I'm cutting a couple orange supremes. I'm going to freeze it real quick with liquid nitrogen and shatter it for my little mustard salad.
So what's that?
This is pickled mustard seeds. Pickled with a little bit of rice wine vinegar, salt, sugar, a couple other things. We use it on... I think we only use it on the pork dish right now. But we like it a lot. It's a nice little pop of acid. It's not overly assertive for mustard or spicy or anything. Nice little texture element on the plate.
Alright, so tell me what you're doing.
I'm finishing this with a little bit of... malt and salt on top of the cup base. Anytime I cut a meat, I like to salt it. Obviously, there's no salt in the middle. I'm gonna finish it with a little bit of lemon oil. We cook lemon rinds at 140 degrees for 2 hours, and shockingly bright lemon flavor for an oil. It just comes out beautifully. And then finishing the whole thing with a little bit of red vein sorrel. I got from Josh Horgan yesterday, actually, because it's gorgeous and delicious, and it, again, a nice little bit of acidity, and the dish is probably more suited for a summer afternoon than a dreary day in December, but hey, you know.
So how do you decide, what are you looking at when you're trying to decide where you're putting the garnish on?
I don't know. So my background, I have a little bit of photojournalism background, so it usually goes into rule of thirds as far as composition. So I really like negative space. I like bright visuals. I like some symmetry throughout it. I like organic shapes, but with a purpose, I guess. That way, every plate I do, I try to have some kind of organic element on the plate to kind of bring it back to something recognizable. I don't know, I just like clean food, whether that's, I mean, plate, flavors, whatever. So this plate's actually, I think this plate's done.
So describe it now.
Okay, so we have a gochujang marinated skirt steak with pickled mustard seed, five spice sweet potato, pickled carrot, baby turnip, black radish, and a fresh mustard salad.
We've been talking with Chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant. For more information on the restaurant, go to ceruleanrestaurant.com or look for the chef on Facebook. Since it is Valentine's Day, I hope you've made your reservations for whatever kind of dinner out sounds most appealing. And there are special Valentine's menus at all sorts of restaurants this weekend. Or, of course, you could cook in. In fact, stop in at a specialty store like Goose the Market or R2Go, and you'll find plenty of ideas for putting together a romantic Valentine's Day meal that doesn't even require cooking. Meats, cheeses, olives, bread, maybe a little something sweet, and you've got an appealing but low-stress meal to share with your Valentine. And don't forget something special to drink. Stop in at a wine shop or grab a growler at a brewery, or stop in at New Day Craft in Fountain Square for some locally crafted mead or hard cider. I'm really liking New Day's Washington's Folly Cherry Mead right now, which seems appropriate seeing as how Monday is President's Day, right? So maybe pick up a special dessert as well. I'm thinking now of the gelato at Goose the Market, and you're all set for a special Valentine's Day. And of course, next week is Mardi Gras. Fat Tuesday is February 17th, so that provides another reason to go out for dinner. And since, as I've been saying all through last year, it is a great time for restaurants right now in Indianapolis, you can see me on Wish TV's Indie Style every other Wednesday with a restaurant news segment, and I haven't run out of new restaurants to talk about yet. In fact, there are several places that have opened and just in the past few weeks that would be great to check out, maybe after this weekend's Valentine's Day rush. Mint Rail Brewery from co-owners Craig Baker and Derek Means, who also own the local eatery and pub in Westfield and the Plow and Anchor in downtown Indianapolis, has opened at 53rd and Winthrop Avenue, right on the Monon Trail, and this is going to be a popular spot for sure. Now, they aren't brewing their own beer yet. There's still some federal permitting that needs to go through, but the kitchen is open with a small lineup of sandwiches and snacks, and there is a locally brewed craft beer available on tap. And the place is family-friendly. The 12,000-square-foot building still seems plenty spacious, even with those brewing tanks in sight. Now, the menu looks good. I've tried a couple of the sandwiches so far, and I can certainly recommend the chicken salad and the meatloaf sandwiches, although the brisket is on my list to try next. And don't miss the pickled eggs. Beautiful and delicious. Bent Rail is going to be a great place in the summertime as well. Look for lots of special events coming up once the weather is warm. Maybe barbecues, music outdoors, even movies that take advantage of the location right on the Monon Trail. So Bent Rail is roomy, bright, and family-friendly. Well, the new location of the Libertine Liquor Bar is just the opposite, and that's a good thing. The cocktail bar is cozy, dark, and crowded down in the basement beneath chef owner Neil Brown's new Pizzology restaurant on Mass Ave, and it definitely has a different vibe from its previous location on Washington Street. But it's a good vibe, loud and crowded at the bar, but with tables and booths to hang out in too. And the cocktails are still creative and well-crafted, and there's a small bar menu as well, which looks good too. I am definitely going back in to try the octopus. Now, another restaurant has opened recently on Mass Ave as well, called Mimi Blue Meatballs. This one specializes in, as the name implied, meatballs, served in a variety of creative ways with sides such as linguine or mashed potatoes, or as sliders or sandwiches. Now, I haven't been in yet to try this one, but I think a meatball sandwich, maybe with a side of mac and queso, sounds like some pretty hearty wintertime food. And another much-anticipated restaurant has opened, and this one, called Tinker Street, is at the corner of New Jersey and 16th Streets. Apparently, Tinker Street was the name of 16th Street back in the day. This over 21 only restaurant is small and crowded and high energy with an appealing menu of shareable plates. Matinker Street is owned by Peter George and Tom Main, two local restaurant industry veterans, and it will be interesting to see how this one works out. Of course, Peter George is the restaurateur who launched Peter's Restaurant in Fountain Square in 1985, although he eventually moved the restaurant to Keystone at the Crossing. But he seems to have hit on a great location for the new restaurant, situated as it is between the Heron Morton neighborhood and the Old North Side, and it seems like the local dining scene has caught up with George and his focus on local seasonal ingredients. Tinker Street seems to fit right into what's going on with the Indianapolis restaurant scene now. And there are plenty more new restaurants to get to in Indianapolis and plenty more set to open in the coming months. So tune in to Eat Drink Indiana Radio again next time for more. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD To The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Happy Valentine's Day, and thanks for tuning in, and I'd like to thank our guests this week as well. Thanks to Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Suites, Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit, Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections, Will Carroll, craft beer writer for EatDrinkIndy.com, and Chef Alan Sternberg, executive chef at Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis. And thanks to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.
Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care, where they focus on patient-centered care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.